Last week's sermon was my attempt at an overview of Micah's summary of what God requires of us as God's people. We just heard it again. He has told you, O mortal, what is good and what does the Lord require of you, but, and a gold star to anyone who can name these three things with me. Number one, to do justice. Number two, to love kindness. And number three, to walk humbly with your God. I want to do that again. He has told you, O mortals, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you or of us? But altogether, number one, to do justice. Number two, to love kindness. And number three, to walk humbly with your God. Very good. This morning, as promised, we're going to take a little deeper look into what it means to do justice. Next week, we'll explore loving kindness together, and the week after that, surprise, we'll consider what it means to walk humbly with God. So as people of God, according to Micah, God requires that we do justice. And remember from last week, if you were here, that the Hebrew word that's translated as require doesn't mean demand or insist on, like we sometimes understand require, but rather it means to seek or yearn for or need, like a flower needs, like a flower requires sunshine and rain. And so in asking, what does God require of us? As God's people, Micah is encouraging us to think about what God seeks from us who are God's people. He's inviting us to consider what God yearns for from us who are in relationship with God. He's calling us to reflect on what God needs from us as co-workers with God, as partners with God in the world, in this world where we are living right now, and this world where God longs for wholeness and healing and the creation of God's beloved community. So as Micah's original listeners and we still today consider that question, Micah actually goes on to answer it for us. God requires that God's people do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God. God requires that God's people, which is us, we are among God's people, along with all who have been God's people. Ever since there has been God and there have been people, and those people and God have been in relationship with one another. So in partnership with all of those people across generations and places, all of these people and so many others, God seeks, God longs for, God yearns that we all do justice, for starters. In other versions, other translations of the Bible, by the way, other phrases that are used are do justly, act justly, be just, practice justice, see that justice is done, do what is right to other people. Do what is fair and just to your neighbor. Live justly. Whichever of those translations we choose, they're all encouraging us, directing us, calling us as God's people to live with justice, to be fair in our dealings with others, to do what is right. Simple. Not simple. So hard. It feels like such a hard thing to do justice. For one thing, the realities of injustice loom so large. The amount of injustice in the world around us, and this is just a sampling as we know, it's overwhelming. How can we possibly do justice? Whatever we could do would seem like a drop in the ocean or maybe even less. How can we not be discouraged before we even start? So I want to talk a little bit about what justice even is before we try to figure out what it means to do justice. In my reading this week, I came across an explanation, description of justice that spoke to me, and I offer it for your consideration. It's from a website called Pulpit Fiction, created by a UCC and a United Methodist pastor. And here's what they say. Justice is about building communities of caring where all lives matter to one another as much as they do to God. I'm going to read that again. Justice is about building communities of caring where all lives matter to one another as much as they do to God. It's such an important journey, such an important path to be on. There's such a need. There's so much injustice in the world. So many people who are treated unjustly. So many opportunities to do justice. We're going to shift gears a little bit now. I'm going to share something about myself with you all. Something that I suspect will reveal a part of you, a part of me, that most, if not all of you, I hope, have not experienced directly. But bear with me, because it's something that's helping me to think about justice in a different way, and I think it's important. As some of you are aware, our little dog, Dusty, was diagnosed with cancer about a month ago. I took him to see a veterinary oncologist, and John and I have decided that we are not going to take him 3 times a week for 5 months to Albuquerque for IV chemotherapy. We decided that we're just going to give him the best life that we can for as long as we can. And that will be different than what I had been doing. It's never been very easy for me to say no to people. When someone needed something from me, I have done my absolute best to meet that need with a smile on my face and with little regard for myself. As long as that someone was a person, when it came to our pets, and especially Dusty, it had been embarrassingly easy, shamefully easy, in fact, for me to say no, to ignore him when he came to me to be petted, to respond to him with comments like, "You are so needy. Get away from me. Leave me alone," with a scowl on my face. I'm not proud of that. And it's changing now. But it was too normal for too long. And I'm acknowledging that in front of all of you, with you, because I think it has something to teach us about justice. I've begun to understand that my eagerness to respond unhesitatingly to the needs of others comes from a largely and previously unconscious belief that that's how I will get people to love me. Tell me what you need me to do, and I'll do it. Tell me who you need me to be, and I'll be that. I won't upset you. I won't disappoint you. I'll hardly even disagree with you. I'll do my best to meet your needs. And in doing so, without either of us realizing it, you will meet mine, my deep need to be loved. And that's how I operated for years, for my whole life. I met the needs of others willingly and kindly and relentlessly. Sometimes needs they didn't even know they had, but I was going to meet them. And I felt so loved and occasionally exhausted and sometimes resentful and almost always like I couldn't say no. Because, as I'm beginning to understand, that might mean I wouldn't be loved. Except to Dusty. I could, and I did, say no to Dusty. because I didn't really care if I upset him. I didn't really care if I disappointed him. I didn't really care if I was a little mean to him because he was just a dog. And he wasn't the one whose love I thought I needed. He wasn't the one whose love mattered. Whether he loved me or not, and we all know that he would ever love me, he loves me. Dogs love their people. But whether he loved me or not didn't feel important. But it was important. Of course, it is important in part because he's a living creature, right? And he offers me, as we all know, any of us who have had dogs, or I think the world knows, that dogs offer such a beautiful version of unconditional love. It's also important, though, because my rejection of that love is revealing my deep brokenness and hurt, like we all have inside of us. It's starting to tell me of the healing that I need deep inside, like we all need. It's been showing me the painfully incomplete understanding of love that I have been operating by, like we all do. I could be dismissive of Dusty's needs because I had been dismissive of my own needs and not recognized it. I could be a little bit mean to him because I'd been a little bit mean to myself and hadn't realized it. I was treating him the way I'd been treating myself, a little bit unkindly, a little unfairly, a little unjustly. Dusty, I believe, had become the holder of the parts of myself that I didn't want to recognize, the hidden parts of myself, the parts that some people might call the shadow parts. And in order for me to begin to treat him differently with some level of awareness, I had to see all of that in myself. It's not easy. There's a reason why those parts are the hidden parts, the shadow parts. We don't like to see those parts of ourselves. It's easier to see what needs fixing out there. It's easier to see what other people need to change than to recognize those things in ourselves. But as I've begun to see that and acknowledge those parts of myself and learn about where they've come from, I've begun to treat myself with a little more kindness. And I've been able to do the same with Dusty. And so I wonder, when it comes to doing justice, when it comes to building communities of caring where all lives matter to one another as much as they do to God, how important is it for us to start with ourselves? How important is it that we build a foundation of caring within ourselves? Deep within ourselves, for ourselves. How important is it that we accept deep within ourselves that we are beloved? Flaws and all, darkness and all, shadow sides and all. Because I believe that there's a Dusty in all of our lives. Whether it's a person or a group of people, someone whose needs we dismiss, whose situation we don't really care about, whose well-being we ignore, who has become the holder of the parts of ourselves we don't want to acknowledge. I think in order to move toward a more just world, what we need to do first is see that, acknowledge that, recognize with compassion and courage, our own dark and shadowy parts, and accept that even in our brokenness and imperfection, we, like all people, are deeply loved. I'm coming to believe more and more fully that it is only when we do that, when we allow healing to take place deep within our souls, Only then will we be able to truly and authentically care for others, truly and courageously seek their well-being as well as ours, truly and unwaveringly believe that all lives matter. And as all of that happens within each of us, we will begin to do justice. Amen.